Welcome to The Inner Game. I'm Gwen Garcelon, your host. Thanks for listening. The Inner Game is about how we nurture and attend to our mind, body, spirit health, and how that allows us to play a bigger game and make a bigger contribution in the areas of purpose that call to us. And these are conversations with people who are committed to making an evolutionary difference with their lives from a place of balance and love and service. Today, I have the pleasure of welcoming Alia Howe to the show. Alia has a rich background as a dance and performance artist, performing and teaching from Lincoln Center in New York City to Athens, Greece. She's also a healer, working with many energetic and hands-on modalities. Recently, she has become known for her gifts as a storyteller and teacher of storytelling. She is mainly a lover of freedom of expression. And thanks so much for sharing this conversation with me today, Alia.
My pleasure, my privilege.
Among the many things we have in common, you also began a pretty earnest spiritual journey early in life, and it really shaped your life. I would love to know a little bit about what stands out for you about from those early years that still may be foundational, you know, from your early 20s and even earlier.
I think I probably want to come back to some of the tone of my childhood. My father was a classical musician, and we would wake up a pianist when he wasn't working as a research scientist and traveling a lot. But so I woke up with the glorious sound of music, the piano, just heavenly music in the morning. The melodies, and it was the one way that my father could share what he was feeling in his heart, and it was really uplifting. And when he would travel for work, he would ask us, well, what do you want, you know, us to bring back? And my brothers and sisters wanted dolls and racing cars, but I was always drawn to crystals and rock. And so he began to bring me a collection back of stones that I felt talked to me from all over the planet. And the land was my first teacher. I grew up in glorious countryside in England, and I would walk some well-known pathways and ley lines, some built by the Romans, some earlier. And there were all of these living traditions of people living with the earth, of worshiping the earth, of massively Roman wonderful pieces of engineering, of their aqueducts carrying water to nourish people, to nourish the land through agriculture. So the land was my first teacher, along with crystals and stones. And then at church, we had an incredible minister that was a phenomenal storyteller, and I loved listening to his sermons, the fantasy, the miracles, the teachings of love. And that followed on into school, where we had an incredible religions as the world teacher. It was fascinating, and it just kept on going. Each step I would go, the first house I lived in, Brian, one of the roommates, his family was a family of well-known English clairvoyants. And if you haven't traveled to rural England, then I just want you to know that there are pretty much almost as many psychic healers and psychic centers on each corner in little cities and little villages as there are pubs.
Interesting.
And so my mum and grandma used to go and see psychics to talk with family members, brothers and sisters that they lost in the Second World War. So always growing up, there was this otherly realm, this great heavenly guidance. And so my first roommate, his family, famous clairvoyants, I would go up to the psychic center in London and receive hand-on healing sessions. And that's where I began to meet the big superstars of America, the trance medium channelers, and then coming over to the States, I would study Reiki. I studied in the Nityananda lineage, meditation, into yoga, and to be honest, I have always been a seeker of truth, and gleaning from teachers that I was fortunate to have come across my way or I would travel to see, inspire me.
You know, it sounds like such a rich upbringing with to have that kind of sensibility around you. And I wonder what you feel like, if you can articulate what the gift of a life with a relationship to the divine or relationship to spirit at its center.
That's if I listen and I don't listen to the menial stories in my head. But the relationship to the divine is the link to the light of my life, the light of life, the awe and wonder of life all around me.
Does it comfort you?
Comfort me. It holds me. So yes.
Mm-hmm. We've talked about, you know, that sort of universal human looking for freedom from suffering, you know, that universal human quest. And I feel like personal development and spiritual development allows us to access that freedom kind of skillfully, because there's lots of ways that we try to access that freedom not very skillfully as human beings. How do you access that freedom? And how does that feel? What does that freedom feel like? What does it give you access to?
I usually, if in trouble with my mind and my emotions and my stories, which sometimes I believe rule my life, I go to the breath. And there are certain pranayama breathing techniques that unhinge my attachment to the story and the story's attachment to playing me. There's definite karmic energy or momentum that makes us repeat the same story or the same thought over and over again that doesn't bring us joy. And so a breath technique and breathing techniques give me the space and the calm. The breath calms the nervous system, calms the mind much faster than anything else. So I go to the breath.
And what's the experience of freedom there? What does the breath give you access to? Why do you do that?
The breath gives me access to the space between the thoughts, the space and stillness and steadiness and calm, where I suddenly open to more expansive connection to everything. I can call it love. I can call it universal life force. I can call it Ishwara, God. But I suddenly move into this still, expansive, glorious calm.
Oh, I so am feeling that in the moment. And it's interesting that, you know, so often we're trying to fill the space, or our space is filled with distraction and information and chatter. And it's having kind of, it takes, I think, a certain amount of trust of that silence, of that stillness, to want to go there. Because I feel like there's so many people who are avoiding the stillness, avoiding that space, you know, that after a while you get to feel like is so nurturing.
I totally agree. I mean, the whole world pulls me, pulls everyone into doing, into momentum. And in order to sit in that kind of spaciousness, it takes
a desire, a willingness to go beyond the personality and to unknow yourself, to go into no time, no space, no identity, expansiveness. And it takes a desire to want to unhinge. And my desire is for that is it's my sanity. It's for my sanity.
Right.
And it's my joy to move into this quiet.
How do you think we can build more faith in the nurturing quality of stillness, because it's the unknown? You know, a lot of people don't want to sit with whatever they haven't looked at in the silence of their own mind, because that's when our shadows come up and that can be uncomfortable. But how can we learn to trust that what's there in that stillness is really there to nurture and serve us?
Practice.
Yeah.
Find a great teacher, a great lineage. Do a little bit of research. Reach out to you. Reach out to me. I certainly am a student, and I am held by teachers who are further along the line than I am in terms of their practice and knowledge, and by teachings that have been around for thousands of years. And we have incredible resources here in the valley.
Yeah, don't we? Yeah, it really is that practice and that willingness to, you know, we've heard it so many times, beginner's mind, you know, go at your life as a student and, you know, continually be in the humility of the beginner's mind. And it's something we're all probably needing to remind ourselves of a lot. So thank you for that.
And there's one thing I want to add is picking up people who are doing the work and talking to them and building community, having a practice buddy, all of these tangible, practical elements are just as important.
Absolutely. Well, let me just say for a moment here, this is Gwen Garcelon, and you're listening to The Inner Game on KDNK. Today I'm talking with performance artist Alia Howe about her personal journey of self-expression and freedom. You know, you've had such a rich background as a dancer and a choreographer and a performer of spoken word. And in just the past few years, you've been creating salons that have showcased many different performing arts, especially storytelling. And I wondered, you know, what you feel like. I mean, storytelling has been at the center of our human culture forever, since language. But there's something about it that feels like it's especially serving people during this moment. And I'm wondering if you have any insight into that, having worked with storytellers so much lately.
I do, but I think just because you have been through a storytelling experience and it's probably living very alive in you, I'd like to bat back at you and just say, what was your experience, Gwen?
Well, one thing I really noticed was that, and for those of so for the listeners, I took a storytelling workshop with Alia and performed my first story in public recently. And going through the process, you know, from writing down what I felt like I wanted to say and trying to say it in a way that felt authentic, I found that I really had to get coherent. Like what I was saying, I had to really feel like I was fully behind it, like I could say it and it felt really true with no sort of artifice or, you know, that it didn't feel too kind of fluffy or, you know, like just that it felt really real. And it and that allowed my whole thought, word, and deed to come into coherence. And this is something I know that catalyzes the evolutionary process. Whenever one of us gets coherent with our truth, it exerts quite a strong evolutionary impact on the collective. And I think we all resonate with authenticity, even if it's, you know, not our truth. We really resonate with someone when they're telling their truth, and it's beautiful. And I just wonder what you feel like the significance of that is, or the service of that, Alia.
Well, I too look for with the storytellers of helping support and guide to a coherent story, because when we are coherent, there's a healing that occurs for us,
right,
as an individual. And by coherent, I mean that as you tell your story, your mind, your body, your emotions are in alignment with your truth, with your purpose. And this heightens then our energy, and we become fuller and more expansive and more connected with ourselves and with the audience. So coherence within the story, having aha moments, standing up for something that is important for you, that you have learned from how you responded in the past, as you retell your story, you'll say, actually, I wouldn't have responded in the same way because of how I view it now. And so we can stand in healing our past by, that was in the past, it's not so easy to do.
Right.
And now I stand with a different compassionate perspective on that. Mm. And the courage and bravery that it takes to stand up and stand tall in our stories and our truths lives on for a long, long time afterwards. And it helps build bridges between different belief systems, different cultures, different identities.
That's a beautiful thought. I'm thinking of Brené Brown's work with vulnerability. And when we get courageous enough to put ourselves in those moments of personal and public vulnerability, there is the possibility for like the deepest wholehearted connection. And man, isn't that needed right now? And
absolutely,
maybe that's part of this too, is that through our own courage to be vulnerable in our storytelling, we build connection and, you know, that greater strength of social fabric that is so precious to our communities and our culture.
And especially in these times, I mean, today as we're talking, it's election day. And part of storytelling is, part of the gift of storytelling is to allow you to stand in your own story, your own convictions, your own beliefs, and be listened to, have people's hearts open to hearing you, having them respond to you. It cultivates individual self-inquiry, self-reflection, and this is where I stand. Mm-hmm. And this is so important in these times that we just don't run with the herd, but we have a look and we study policies, opinions, perspectives, and where do I stand in this? And storytelling can help us to not only stand in our own story, but also open to the perspectives of where other people stand, peacefully sitting and listening.
Mm. That piece of listening and bearing witness also feels very potent right now as well. I know there's such a healing. What I know about the grief process is that there is an incredible service that we provide to others by just bearing witness to their grief, their stories. And I wonder if you experience that as many times as you've seen audiences and storytellers.
Yes, I see it right from the beginning in our process when pre-COVID times I met with people in person and I would listen to their life, their story, without any breaks on. It was like, what would you like to tell me about yourself? And I'd ask questions. I wouldn't then talk back so much about what happened in my life as relating, but tell me more about you.
And that is the process that the listening to the story that happens all the way through. I hold that thread from the first meeting until the performance. And so people know that their lives are important, their perspectives are important, the minute detail, the biggest details are important, because it's what is coming up in that moment in time as we share story together.
Mm.
So bearing witness, being seen and being heard until you are done, fully done, fully done.
Right.
The indigenous peoples have this natural way of communicating that I have met is, as I have shared stories, my next-door neighbor was of Navajo heritage, and he would ask me in the story, do you have anything else to say? And he would be silent for a while. He would then say, is that all? And he'd be silent for a little more. Do you have any other thoughts on that? He would keep asking me that, and we would maybe have 5 to 10 minutes of silence and space before I could truly say to him, I think I'm done. And that spaciousness of being listened to, and in dance, it's having someone sit and watch you move.
Right.
And just witness you, the witness and acceptance, and the witness from a perspective of love is deeply, deeply healing.
Wow. I'm thinking about also, you know, in the grief process, how we know now that the bearing witness, the just listening and being present for someone allows them to discharge their grief. Otherwise, we go around holding on to it. We go around just full of it and not able to access that freedom that comes from being able to discharge it through having someone bear witness to us and listen and hold us. And it feels like part of that, you know, I saw so much of that going on as I saw people sharing their stories and the difficult things that they'd been holding on to and the beautiful things that they'd been holding on to, and how that allows for, you know, something really miraculous to happen, you know, some real shared healing to happen. It's really fascinating and beautiful to experience.
And I can also say in part of my coaching style is deeply influenced by some of the teachings in Vedanta, which is a philosophy, a way of right living that has been around for a long time. And they have this practice called Atma Vichara, or Vichara practice of self-inquiry. And Rob Strider, who lives here in the valley, teaches an amazing course called The Four Desires, creating a life that you want. And he also has this chapter to be a part of this course. And this is where talk about something, and when we share our story, always within the story is something, or most always in the story, is something that hasn't worked in your life, a roadblock, a tragedy. And we'll spend a little bit of time mining that. And then I will also ask the storytellers to reflect on, so something wasn't working there. Something was lost. Something didn't work. Something made you angry. Something agitated your state of serenity. And let's name that and give that all the energy that you want for a short period of time. And then let's have a look at where would you like to go? What do you want? What do you need? What do you desire? That example has given you an amazing stepping off place to what do you want to now create? What could be the next step? And so our process of creating story and looking back on a story that we have lived or are still living, and is there something in that story that could be a jumping off place to a life that would be more fulfilling or a perspective that might be more joyful?
Hmm. so much of it is through that beautiful practice of self-inquiry and self-awareness, and our stories give us so much access to that. Well, our time has come to an end, and I thank you so much for all you've shared today, Alia. It's really been lovely.
I've enjoyed our hikes together, time spent together. So I my request is may that continue off the air.
Aho. Thank you for listening today. If you have questions for Alia or me, you can join the Facebook page at The Inner Game, and we can continue the conversation there, and you can learn where to listen to past shows. And until next time, stand in your truth in this moment and speak it with courage.
They are not known to the sleeping, but you, my child, are awake. You, my child, are awake. You, my child.